are listening to The Kevin Smith Show.
Comments and views expressed on The Kevin Smith Show are those of the people who make them and do not necessarily represent the views of Kevin Smith, The Kevin Smith Show, or any of its affiliates or advertisers. Hi, folks. Welcome to The Kevin Smith Show. Whoever you are, wherever you are, all around this gorgeous, gorgeous globe on which we live, thank you for being here at The Kevin Smith Show. Those of you joining us for the very first time, a special welcome. I'm glad you're here as well, and I hope you make a habit out of it. It's a great habit to get into. In fact, it's if you just got to be addicted to something, this is a really good thing to be addicted to. The Kevin Smith Show. We have a lot of Kevin Smith Show addicts around the world, and we're trying to make some more. You need to know about the K-Files e-zine. If you are not yet subscribed, you got to ask yourself why. Why would you not choose to be in the light? Why would you choose to stay in the dark? It's free, and all you have to do is just go over to kevinsmithshow.com. And you'll see in big red letters, K-Files e-zine. Click on that, free to subscribe. You can unsubscribe anytime you want to. And we don't rent the mailing list out or loan it out or lease it or sell it or anything like that. It's ours. It's confidential. And you're not going to start getting all kinds of huge spam mail as a result of subscribing. Couple of things. I know most of you are already aware of these things, but we have a lot of new listeners, and we have just moved the entire website, as you know, and some of it went wacky and had to be fixed. We're still working through. I've got one more problem to fix, and I think everything will be working then. But we have free podcasts. We choose one show each week to put in our free podcast. And then if you want the full archives, well, that's in the members area. The free podcasts are, as the name implies, free. The members area, you have to subscribe to get in there. But I'll tell you what, it's more fun than is legal. So be sure you subscribe to that as well. Very quickly, I mentioned last week, someone had suggested to me that because in the early years of this show, you know, it started in Kosovo, and I've broadcast from Kosovo. I've broadcast from, the show has originated from Kosovo, Serbia, Macedonia, Italy, Spain, Vienna, Romania, Australia, Indonesia, East Timor, Thailand, a bunch of other places I can't remember right now. And so someone suggested, why don't you do a trip and take people to some of the places that you've been? Well, the coolest place that is, well, I can't say the coolest place, but really a cool place that I've been, they're all really cool, is Thailand. And I mentioned that. And I said, if you're interested in going, let me know, and if there's enough people that are interested, I'll put the trip together. Well, we've had quite a number of people that have said they're interested. If you're interested and you think if we put the trip together, you might be interested in going, then you need to send me an email. Just go on my site, use the contact page. Look on the menu. You'll see it says contact us. And then when you get to that page for the subject, select other. All right? And it'll automatically get filtered into the right email box. My guest this evening is the person you really want to talk to if you really want to know some stuff about UFOs and extraterrestrials and such things as that. Colonel Donald Ware is with us this evening. Formerly with the Air Force, he is now retired, but he's with us this evening. We'll be back right after this. Most of the great music you hear right here on Steel Eye Media Network is supplied by the independent artists from GarageBand.com. If you hear a song you like, go over to GarageBand.com, look it up, download it. You can even buy the group's CDs, in many cases, right there at GarageBand.com. Okay, folks, this is what you've been waiting for, your vacation of a lifetime. It awaits your arrival down under in beautiful and historic Hobart, Tasmania. And to make sure your holiday really is a dream come true, you'll be staying at the Bath Street Apartments. Here are just a few of the things that you'll enjoy in your home for the holidays. Stunning water and mountain views from all windows and from your own private balcony or veranda. Modern furnishings, a full modern kitchen with all new appliances, oven and hot plates, fat-free grill, full-size refrigerator, large-capacity microwave oven, cappuccino machine, dishwasher, and enough crockery, cutlery, and utensils to satisfy anyone's culinary desires. The lounge room has an extensive range of electronic home entertainment equipment, including, now get this, a big-screen TV, free digital satellite, pay TV on Foxtel All-Star with over 60 channels, DVD, video, wireless broadband connection, free local telephone calls from the in-room telephone with your own private telephone number so loved ones and friends can call you directly. The bathroom? Wow, the bathroom has a large spa bath, separate shower cubicle, ceiling-mounted heat lamp and fan and hair dryer, and it just gets better and better. Folks, you've got to see Bath Street Apartments, so click the banner over on the Kevin Smith Show website, or just go to bathstreetapartments.com.au. Your dreams are awaiting your arrival. Alien Seeker News has blasted off and is providing a new and important resource for everyone interested in UFOs, aliens, alien abductions, Bigfoot, Chupacabra, and more. Featuring five of the top UFO radio talk shows, lots of information and articles in free forums, Alien Seeker News has launched on its journey to greatness. Go to AlienSeekerNews.com, register for the free forums, and get the classic Flying Saucers Are Real by Major Donald Kehoe as a free ebook. Join today. I cannot stress enough, folks, how important it is if you are interested in going on that trip. I need to hear from you. That doesn't mean that, you know, I'm not asking you to shell out any money here. I just need to get an idea of how many people would be going, and we're going to put it together. Now, look, it's going to probably be in the latter part of October, all right, if that helps you do any planning. And the reason is because I want you to be a part of a festival that I know will take place. It is incredible. It is just phenomenal. It's breathtaking, and I want you to be there for that, all right? My guest is Colonel Donald Ware, retired from the U.S. Air Force, and he really has quite a resume. Donald Ware has studied UFOs since he first saw seven alien vehicles over Washington, D.C., July the 26th, 1952. He is a scientist. He's got a M.S. degree in nuclear engineering from the Air Force Institute of Technology. He's been a fighter pilot, staff scientist, test manager, and teacher. And then he retired from the U.S. Air Force in 1983. He's had three articles published in scientific journals, and he has served as the state director and eastern regional director for MUFON, and he is the director of the International UFO Congress. Donald Ware, welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show.
Hello, Kevin. Hello, world.
Hello, world is right. You know, the last time, Donald, that you were on this show, our audience, we could document our audience being in about 59 countries, and it's now 95 countries. So things have just continued to grow and grow and grow, and when you say hello, world, it really is these days.
Well, that's good, because this subject is certainly of worldwide significance.
It is, and all over the world, people are interested in it as well. Let me just start with this question about your sighting of these unidentified flying objects back in 1952. And by the way, I've seen photographs of that. Either Look or Life magazine ran that. And I've seen that, and it is phenomenal. But when you saw what you saw, was there any question in your mind that those were alien vehicles?
Well, yes, there was. I was just 16 years old, but I remember reading the newspaper headlines there in Washington Star the previous Sunday morning that said flying saucers over Washington. Since the night I saw them on the following Saturday night, there were just seven red light type UFOs wandering around in somewhat random motion over the Capitol, and they obviously were not any kind of aircraft that I knew about or didn't appear to be natural phenomenon, so I just called them unidentified. And it actually took me about 2 years of investigation to convince myself that these were, in fact, alien vehicles. And in hindsight now, they appeared very much like the red light type UFOs that were seen by many, many people in Gulf Breeze in the late 80s and early 90s. You know, they, in phase two of the Gulf Breeze sightings, they put on a they appeared two or three times a week for 18 months so that anybody wanted to see them with their own eyes could see them. And I know that those red light type UFOs came from two different kinds of alien vehicles, one manned and one not manned. And we have photographs of them. So it's an interesting journey.
One of the things.
May I start out with a couple of statements that
sure, you may.
Important for people to consider?
Yeah.
You know, I've been a truth seeker for 56 years, and basically I've learned that the universe will always be far more complex than the human mind can comprehend, and that this world is a far different place than what most people are aware of. So anyone that chooses to study these strange objects and the reality they are associated with needs to keep a large mental whole basket. That's helped me greatly in my learning curve.
Well, I think it's very well stated. I've often said something similar, and that is if you take everything we know and you compare it to everything there is to know, the total the sum of everything we know is microscopic in comparison.
Yes.
And
may I give you about 2 minutes on the evolution of my thought in this process?
Yeah, and let me say something before you start that, because okay. I wanted to ask you, I mean, here you are, a nuclear scientist, a fighter pilot in the Air Force all those years, a teacher, and you have this ongoing and deepening relationship with this topic of UFOs and extraterrestrials. How does that happen?
By having a large mental hole basket. No, I've actually, since I saw those things, I became a truth seeker, and I read everything I could find about UFOs and the reality they represent ever since I was 16 years old. There were a million volumes in the Duke Library. I spent 4 years there and then 26 years in the Air Force. Lots of very good UFO books in Air Force libraries all over the world. And, you know, the government wants the information to get into the public domain. They just don't want to have to address it. When Colonel Corso wrote his book, I think by direction from above, called The Day After Roswell.
Yeah.
The initial order for that book at Kirtland Air Force Base was 500 copies.
At Kirtland Air Force Base?
At just Kirtland Air Force Base. The initial order in the Air Force Base Exchange for that book was 500 copies. That tells you something right there. But the basic reason behind that book, as I understand it, is that they knew a lot of people had figured out that government is getting a lot of advantage, our government in particular, from technologies, from alien vehicles. And I think some people were a little angry about that. So the book shows people that some of those technologies that could not easily be used for warlike purposes were being leaked into the public domain. And so the public, the general public, was getting a benefit from them.
You were going to say something, you said, about a two-minute statement to
right.
sort of set up how we came to where we are, or something like along those lines. So let me give you that time to do that.
Okay. While I was in the service, I was pretty busy as a fighter pilot for the first 10 years, and then went back to school and got my master's, and I only had time to study UFOs and comparative religion. I realized when I retired at age 47, didn't have to work for a living, I had 100% of my time to do whatever I wanted, that those were two avenues through which I got a glimpse of this much larger reality. And I asked myself, what are other avenues that I can study to learn more about that? And I made what I think are logical decisions, that all the persistent mysteries of mankind would help me learn more about that large reality. And I started with reincarnation, because I realized that most of the people I'd met who had seen UFOs were involved in a hybridization program. Particularly the abductees, the people who have been on board UFOs are involved in a hybridization program. And unless, you know, when the evidence shows that we with aliens are building better bodies to house our souls in future incarnations, unless you can personally accept reincarnation, that makes no sense. So I studied that, and then I studied telepathy, because that's the way aliens communicate with each other and with human beings. Direct projection of thought. And then I studied out-of-body experiences and near-death experiences and spiritual healing. And I'd go to 6 conferences a year, every year since 83, and a lot of people were talking about conspiracies and government, and so I studied world government. And an interesting thing happened, because in 1989 I started getting overt assistance from people associated with world government, from angels and aliens. And my life has really been exciting ever since.
Well, I would say so, yeah. Now,
while I was in the service, I only met six people who had seen UFOs up close and told me their stories. I have no official information. All the information I have about the alien presence is stuff that I've acquired from basic research and what's been leaked to the public through various sources.
Well, let's talk about a leak to the public that's really making the news right now, and that is from the Romanian Defense Ministry. Have you heard about this?
The Romanian Defense Ministry?
Yes.
No, I haven't picked up on that one yet.
On Friday, last Friday, the Romanian Defense Ministry held a press conference, and they announced that October 31st, 2007, one of their fighter planes, a MiG-21, was rammed in the air by four UFOs, and that this was caught on the gun cameras, and they had the video, and they released the video, and the videos that I have seen since then also show that the plane was able to land. I don't know what it's called, but the cockpit cover, the windshield, the bubble, what do you call that? The cowling?
Canopy.
Canopy. The canopy is broken, and there's damage to the aircraft that you can see, and you get just a couple of seconds of the gun camera footage. But they also show the radar screen and what they were tracking on radar.
Right.
And
that's interesting. Approximately how big were the objects?
Well, they didn't say, and you really can't tell from this from the footage of the incident. But the interesting thing to me, and what I wanted to ask you about, is that here is you can't get more official than the Defense Ministry of a country.
Right.
And here's the Defense Ministry saying, all right, here's the video, here's what happened, here's when it happened, and we don't know what those things are. Now, does that, you know, sort of signal more openness around from governments around the world to...
Yeah, I really think that someone at the world level is encouraging all national governments to find a way to be more open on this subject. Time is moving on, and we're getting closer to the day when everybody is going to be joining a galactic society, not just those special few who are picked up and taken to various bases here and elsewhere and stuff like that. It's going to be a worldwide thing sooner than most people are going to be ready for it, probably, in my opinion.
You know, Dr. Michael Sala released a report back in February, and we've talked about it many times here on this show. In his article, he reported on a meeting that was alleged to have taken place at the United Nations involving 40 to 50 representatives of different countries, and they talked about UFO disclosure. Now, since that time, I've quit calling it alleged. I'm calling it the reported meeting, because the agenda that was outlined, that he reported on, that was supposed to have been outlined in that meeting, seems to be taking place.
Yeah, I think that meeting did take place. It's been convincing for me anyway. Let me move back to that other subject of a midair with the Romanian fighter pilot.
Yes.
I've had reports of midairs by our fighters coming out of Luke Air Force Base on the way to Ajo Range down in Arizona. I recall one time, I forget the date, but it happened 2 days in a row. And
now, this is not sightings, but actual collisions?
Yeah, these are actual collisions reported by a wingman think they're F-16s. That's very strange, but the one that was on video or on camera, a movie or something, was in Brazil doing a air show promoting, you know, it was like our Thunderbirds. It was promoting the Air Force to the young people of Brazil. And this aircraft that was doing the aerobatics for this air show had an unidentified object that probably was only a foot or two in diameter that came and crossed very close to the base of the right wing. And when the aircraft went into a 4G pull-up, the right wing fell off. And the pilot mysteriously survived that event. But it wiped out that airplane during their recruiting demonstration with their aerobatic, you know, their equivalent to our Thunderbirds. And you wonder why those kind of things happen, but then I'm wondering whether Brazil actually needs to have an Air Force with high-performance aircraft, et cetera.
Well, what do you make of that incident? I mean, this object is, I think you said, about a foot in diameter. What could that be?
I think there's a message there somewhere, and I'm not quite sure what the message is, but I think these things happen for a reason. You know, the ETs that are watching us look at world issues from a different perspective from most humans. And you got to try and look at it from their perspective, I think, to try and figure out what the meaning is of these various events. But I don't think it's an accident.
Well, would that have been, that object, would that have been like a probe from an extraterrestrial vehicle somewhere? Or
I have no idea. It appeared to be intelligently controlled. It appeared to be small and unmanned, but well guided, and it appeared to be associated with the wing coming off that airplane as soon as the pilot put 4Gs on it.
Now, based on what you said earlier, it would seem that these collisions with unidentified objects, unidentified aerial objects, it's not all that rare.
It happens. You know, we got film of that one. The ones in the U.S. Air Force, I can't prove. These are just single source reports. One that I did write an article about, which is on my website, it's called The Rest of the Missing A-10 Story.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not sure where you've heard that or not. Several, 6 or 8 months ago, I put 15 of my papers I've written over the years on a little free website, freewebs.com/Don Ware, D-O-N-W-A-R-E. If anybody's interested, you could spend a few hours reading on those papers. But this little report, bits and pieces of information came to me from several different sources at the same time. And I'll tell you generally what it said, if you can give me a couple of minutes here.
Well, yeah, I can. But let me tell you, we're only about, we're 29 seconds from break.
Okay, we'll do that one after the break.
Yeah.
Right.
But I got to tell you, that, you know, on the one hand, I got an eyebrow raised here about the Luke Air Force report, Air Force Base report that you gave us. It's like, wow, I didn't know that. And at the same time, I have an equally strong impression that I'm not surprised. All right, we have to take a break, folks. We'll be back right after this. More with Donald Ware when we come back. My guest this evening is Colonel Donald Ware. And Donald, you were just about to share something with us there. You said it'd take a couple of minutes, and we held it till after break, so you're on.
Okay, the rest of the missing 810 story, you may be somewhat familiar with the event because it was in the headlines for about a week. Starts with a lady in Tucson, Arizona, who is quite psychic and had an alien friend she communicates with telepathically. Her alien friend contacted her and said, we would like to land our vehicle in an arroyo near Davis-Monthan Air Force Base and speak to some people, and we would like assurances that we will not be shot at. Can you please get those assurances for us? And she wasn't real familiar with Air Force procedures, et cetera. She calls the command post at Davis-Monthan. That, by the way, is where the big aircraft boneyard is, where all these advanced weapons of war in mothballs.
Yeah.
And she speaks to, you know, a sergeant who answers the phone and explains just what she's interested in doing. And he doesn't pay her much respect and passes her off to a more senior sergeant. And she tells the story again about this alien friend that wants to land nearby and doesn't want to get shot at. And can they arrange, make sure that doesn't happen? And and got no more respect from him either, and so she gave up on him. And her next call was to Senator Kyle's office, and spoke to one of his aides, told the same story, and got no more respect from the civilian side of government than she did the military. And so she tells her alien friend that evening, and he says, well, we may have to do something more forceful to get their attention. She had just seen the movie Independence Day, and she says, oh, please don't hit us with any of those blue beans. And her friend's response was, no, perhaps we'll take one of their aircraft in the air. And that was the end of that conversation. Well, she thought this was important, so she called her UFO research friend in Tucson, who then called Wendell Stevens, the man who owns the UFO photo archives and I think knows more about the alien presence than any human being I know. And Wendell arranged a luncheon meeting with the lady the next day at the Good Earth restaurant in Tucson. And while that meeting was taking place and she was telling Wendell that story, the number three aircraft and a three-man flight of 810s on the range at Ajo became missing. Made big deal. I mean, it was like 58 seconds between radio calls. He answered one from the leader. 58 seconds later, he didn't answer. The leader looked around for him. The sky is clear. The planes are, A-10s are not fast. Big desert. The airplane was nowhere in sight. They called off the bombing mission. Everybody started searching for him. They sent up search parties from the base. The airplane disappeared. However, Wendell found that the FAA guys said that an unidentified radar image entered the range, merged with his aircraft, and then they both headed north. So Wendell had friends in the command post, and he said that they were really busy trying to prepare for a contingency for any way that plane could possibly be recovered and or pilot. And it was in the news for a while, and there were four or 500 pound bombs on the plane too, and the plane eventually was tracked in Colorado and was in little bits and pieces of it they saw on some kind of radars. It actually crashed on the top of New York Mountain, not far from Cheyenne Mountain, just to the west of Cheyenne Mountain. And it was recovered quite a while later. It was high elevation, deep snow, no population up there, so it was quite hard to get to in that time. And it had no bombs on it. And they said that they recovered some biologic material, end quote, that they said they sent to a lab in Washington, D.C., and they said it was him. So they said that once, and nobody made any more mention of the pilot. But I know that that's a slow airplane, and it's the only one the pilot is encased in a titanium bathtub, so to speak, for protection from ground fire. And the canopy was still on the airplane. And they would describe it, you know, something more than biologic material they found at the crash site. There would have been a body in the cockpit. There could have been a funeral service, et cetera, but it didn't happen. Well, anyway, I found that what really happened, because my psychic friend, you know, asked about it and said that, and I studied it. So the story, you know, with a lot of different pieces of information, was that Craig had been in the Air Force 9 years teaching other pilots how to fly, and he'd just gotten orders to Spangdahlem Air Force Base to fly A-10s. He had to go through training Davis-Monthan first. His squadron would have been deployed to Kosovo, where he'd probably been killing people. He was a very nice guy, had very few close relatives, that is, no girlfriend. His parents were divorced. He had no brothers and sisters. And the alien fella said that they picked him up, removed the bombs from the airplane, gave him a choice to stay with them or go back, and after they told him what he would be doing, you know, if he went on with his A-10 training, and he chose to stay with them. I expect he's flying something a lot fancier than an A-10 right now. Probably something that avoids gravity.
So a little bit more sophisticated.
Right. I would say that he was a fourth density soul that was removed from the third density society, like a number of other people have been, in my opinion. But the other part of this story, which is kind of guided to me from many different sources, is that there was a strange alert at Cheyenne Mountain a few days later, and reports are that the flying saucer landed just outside the gate at Cheyenne Mountain there in Colorado, and for the purpose of talking to somebody, and the daughter of a lady that lives four miles from me was a captain in the command post at the time, and she was able to call her mother. She told her mother that she was restricted, she was not allowed out of that facility, that underground facility, for 2 days. She didn't know what was going on outside. She asked her mother what was in the headlines of the newspaper. And the mother said, well, it's all about the missing A-10. And the mother, although she wasn't told directly, the mother got the idea that the reason she was restricted to inside of that facility was because of the missing A-10 thing. And I think what really happened is once they got attention of the high-level folks, they were able to talk to them about what they do at Davis-Monthan, which is selling sophisticated weapons to governments, third-world governments, and people, individuals, who really have no need for these sophisticated weapons of war. It's time we got beyond that. Anyway, it's a very strange story, and if you want to read the details, it's one of the 15 papers on the website.
You know, the thought occurs to me that, you know, here you are retired from the Air Force, and you're telling us things that are just mind-blowing. Have you ever gotten any flack from the Air Force for what you say and what you write and what you do?
None whatsoever, and I write some really strange stuff. But I think the reason that I haven't gotten the flack is because I don't take offense. I think I understand the policies. The U.S. government policy was codified in 1953 by the Robertson panel, which says basically it's in the national interest to keep the public from getting too excited about the alien presence. And I know they have methods to enforce that policy. And some of them are somewhat shocking. And if you want the gory details, I can tell you. But world government have different policies. National governments, in my opinion, represent the majority on the planet, who are at a certain level of consciousness, maybe 5.5 billion, who are here to use free will to make choices that polarize their soul toward service to others or service to self. Whereas our world government, which don't refer to themselves as that, but the Council on Foreign Relations is a U.S. branch, their policy is to put information into the public domain so it's available for those seeking it without forcing it on those who are not ready. And I think they represent the meek destined to inherit this planet at some time in the near future, or you might say are inheriting the planet one person at a time as they become eligible and are invited to join this society that has a lot of commerce going on with ET right now.
All right, we have to take a break. When we come back, I want to pick up right there and discuss what you just mentioned, and that is commerce with the ET. All right, we'll be back with Colonel Ware right after this. Get it all. Become a member at kevinsmithshow.com. We had to go away for break. You just made the comment that there are people who are doing an awful lot of commerce with extraterrestrials. Tell us a little bit about that.
Okay, I can start in several different places, but let me start with my my fairly new friend Charlie Hall, who I met at an international UFO congress. He was a weatherman at Indian Springs Air Force Base in Nevada, getting weather for the bombing ranges. In fact, the one there at Indian Springs, range number one, I was dropping bombs on the same time he was there in the in the latter part of the 60s. He was used as a guinea pig by aliens to experience how humans think, react, feel the energies put out by human beings before they went into negotiations with various government people, or before they went on R&R in downtown Las Vegas, you know, to see what these strange humans were like.
Uh-huh.
He said that in Area 54, which is a little to the east of Area 51, aliens would land their motherships, and they'd be on the ground for 2 weeks while a company called Booz Allen had the contract for resupplying those alien vehicles. And I thought that was kind of interesting, because now I watch golf matches where Booz Allen Hamilton is sponsoring them. You don't hear much about what that company does. But I ran across something that intrigued me. I was invited. Let me back up and say that I was a participant in the sixth and last State of the World Forum, held at the New York Hilton in conjunction with the UN Millennium Summit in September 2000,
mm-hmm.
which allowed me to participate in roundtables on democratizing world governance and getting more spirituality into the UN and manipulation of the human genome, interesting subjects. But it also allowed me to get to put my own web page on an exclusive State of the World Forum website, only accessible to those people who participated in those six State of the World Forums, who are trying to define the kind of world we want to live on in the next century, or this century we're in now. And that allowed me to be, or that caused me to get an invitation to be one of the 150 people invited to the Brussels Conference, 18 to 20 June 2003. The title of that conference was National Sovereignty and Universal Challenges, Choices for the World After Iraq. And it was chaired by George Bethowen, who is the European chairman of the Trilateral Commission from 1975 to 1992, and it had a bunch of interesting speakers, like Air Marshal Sir Timothy Garden, who headed the Royal Institute for International Affairs, you know, equivalent to our Council on Foreign Relations, Prince, now King Abdullah from Jordan, and representing James Woolsey, who was our head of the CIA, represented Booz Allen Hamilton. His title there was Partner Booz Allen Hamilton. My title that I was invited to this conference, where it was just world leaders, leaders of think tanks working on world government organizations, and leaders of international organizations, I was invited under the title Director International UFO Congress. I think just because I had a broader view of what's going on than most people, that kind of blew me away.
When you
think about, you know, a guy leaving the job of director of CIA and becoming a partner of an organization that has been doing commerce with ET since the mid '60s, anyway. Interesting.
I want to go back to, yes, it is interesting, and I want to come back to that. But I want, before we get too far away from it, I want to go back to the comment you made about that you were flying bombing missions over the range there at Indian Springs back when Charles Hall was there. From the air, were you able to see any installation at the north end of that valley?
Well, you know, I dropped a lot of bombs on Range 2, which is an unmanned, it's electrically scored range, and that's the one where the aliens had their base on, the aliens that were coming and interacting with Charles daily, and that he actually went up to visit them in the Range 2 area. And also from Range 4, which is just on the north side of Area 51, I could see all the, you know, the runway and all the buildings there at Area 51, Groom Lake, and we were not allowed to fly into the restricted area except if we had a problem with our F-105s. That was a $5 million airplane at the time, which was considered fairly expensive, and if we had a problem up there on the range, rather than dump the airplane in the desert, we were told we could land at Groom Lake, there at Area 51. However, if we went into the restricted area, our wingman had to land with us. You can't overfly that base without sitting through their debriefing. So, I've been well aware officially of Area 51 for a long time.
Well, what I was specifically referring to is the alien base that Charles talks about as being at the north end of the valley there.
It's apparently well camouflaged. No, I could not see anything from the air except the Dogbone Lake and the targets in it.
Were you aware of stories about Indian Lake, about strange phenomena there at the time?
Actually, when I came back from my second combat tour, when I came back from my first combat tour in 1966, I was an instructor pilot. And one of my fellow instructor pilots was coming off of Range 4 with three students. One of them had called Bingo. It means he's got to head straight home to land, or he's going to have to declare emergency fuel. So they were climbing out through 25,000 feet in spread formation, tactical spread, about 2,000 feet apart. When all four of them saw this strange object come down through their flight at about a 45-degree angle and crash in the desert. They said it reminded them somewhere of a cross between a missile and a plane. And he reported it to the tower at Nellis, and when they landed, as he was coming down the ladder, some guy in an unmarked flight suit walked up to him and says, "Are you the guy that reported the crash?" And he says, "Yes." He says, "Come with me." The guy says, "Well, I've got to fill out the dash one here, tell the crew chief what's wrong with it." He says, "Don't have time for that." So he handed the dash one to the crew chief, and as he was walking away, told him what to write up. Then he says, Jim says, I've got to tell my students, I got to tell the boss where I'm going." And he says, "Don't have time for that." So he yells off to the student that he's going with this guy in the flight suit, gets in an unmarked helicopter, and they take off heading northwest there using the call sign Boxer Control. This guy apparently wanted him to find that object that crashed in the desert that he saw from 25,000 feet from an F-105, but he was only about 500 feet in a helicopter, and it was very difficult. He did not find it. It was getting dark. The guy set him down on that highway, the extraterrestrial highway now, between Tonopah and St. George, at dusk, and said, "Sorry, but we don't have time to take you home," and he left him there. He had nothing on but a sweaty old flight suit, no water, no food, no nothing. Jim was really lucky a car came down that road that night and picked him up, took him to St. George, where he could call the base and get him to come pick him up. But these guys are serious about what they do. But, yeah, we had little indications like that, that there was some weird stuff going on up there.
Well, the reason that I asked, and we have a break coming up, but the reason that I asked is because I first became familiar with Indian Springs when a retired Air Force guy, who's a friend of mine, never admitted he listened to the show, but he always carried on conversations with me about it, and he said, "You ought to take a look at Indian Springs." Next thing that happened, I ran into Charles Hall, and we did just that.
All right, we're into a break. We'll be back with Donald Ware and your telephone calls right after this.
It's just so plain to see. You look so good to me. Just don't know how to act or who I'm supposed to be. I'll give you anything. I'll promise you a ring. But pretty soon you're gonna hate my everything. Ain't got no money. Ain't got no time. Ain't got no reason that you should be mine. Me and my music, it's all I got. But I can't help being somebody I'm not. Somebody I'm not. So what you wanna do? Maybe a night or two. I'll take you around the world and say I love you too. I always will be true. We never will be through. Don't listen to the things your friends keep telling you. Ain't got no money. Ain't got no time. Ain't got no reason that you should be mine. Me and my music, it's all I got. But I can't help being somebody I'm not. Somebody I'm not.
Kevin Smith at 1-800-289-1092.
All right, let me tell you the ways to get in touch with us. If you have a question or if you have a comment for Colonel Ware, you can call toll-free 1-800-289-1092. That works anywhere in the United States and Canada. If you're outside of that area, then you can Skype in, and the Skype address is kevin.smith.show. All right, kevin.smith.show. It always amazes me. People get confused. They get to the Kevin Smith. Now, and what else? Okay, my name's Kevin Smith, and you're listening to a show, kevin.smith.show, all right? Or you can send me, if you're outside of our toll-free area, USA and Canada, you can send me a flash message. Send it to flash@kevinsmithshow.com.
Donald, we have a caller online, so let's go straight to the telephones. Caller, you are live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
Hello, good evening, Mr. Smith and Mr. Ware. My name is Eric. I'm from Atlanta, Georgia.
Okay, go ahead. Go ahead, Eric. We're glad to have you.
Okay. Hello, Mr. Ware. Touching upon the psychic experiences you've had, well, people that have psychic abilities, my mother knows a couple here that lives in the North Georgia mountains. They live on a 10-acre plot of land. Back in 2005, they had a friend who had an ability called toning. Are you familiar with that?
Toning? toning, you say?
Toning, yeah. She's able to pick up on certain frequencies that other people can't, apparently.
I've heard of it, but I don't know much about it.
Well, one night back in 2005, she came over to this couple's house and said, "You got to come out, they're coming." And they didn't know what she was talking about. And at the time, they were skeptics of UFOs. And so they came out, and her husband, Tony, who I've spoken with, this couple's in their 40s now, he brought a high-power flashlight with him, and they went to this pond in the back of their house, and the three of them stood there, and this large triangle silent craft came and hovered about 100 feet above them, and he shined the flashlight up at it and said, "Oh my God, there's no fuselage," because he's a mechanical engineer, or he was. And the next thing they remember was standing facing the other direction, watching this craft leave. And I tried to get them to go on talk shows and send the report to MUFON, but they don't want anything to do with it because they're scared of the government coming after them. But I tried to tell them that they don't need to be. But since then, I guess their friend has moved up to Washington, D.C., and she doesn't even like to talk about the event. But I was wondering.
Interesting story. You know, I have several kids and 10 grandkids in Atlanta, and a good friend named Robin Quayle, who lives there, who is a hypnotherapist and has done a lot of interesting work, particularly with a mass abduction of everybody that was in a central telephone company building at the time there in Atlanta. But
I was wondering what
if the lady was still around and wanted to learn what happened in that missing time, Robin could probably help her.
Okay, I did send you an email from your website, and I attached my phone number, just so you know. I just had knee surgery. I'm going to be out for a few weeks. So anyways, I was wondering what your opinion of Bob Lazar is.
Yeah, Bob Lazar's, I think, has always told us the truth, and that has been verified recently in, one of the releases recently just verified that Bob Lazar's information was correct, and this was an official or a government release that was kind of leaked out.
You were 16 at the time of the
1970s. No, I'll take that back. It was Dan Bursch's interview with Rob Simone at the last International UFO Congress. Dan is a member of MJ-12 and was directed when when that organization was recently disbanded to be reorganized with different people. He was directed to tell us about what he was doing underground in Area 51 with live alien tissue and his interactions with the J-Rod that was there from the 53 crash in Kingman. That's a very interesting story. That's one of the later releases. So,
just one more question.
He verified, you know, he knew Bob, and everything Bob said was correct because he was down there working down on Area 51 too and saw the same stuff.
I guess S4 location near Papoose Lake is a supposed location.
Okay, Eric, you're going to have to hurry up with your next question because we have other people lined up trying to get on.
One more question. That was, you were 16 at the time in 1952 over when the UFOs were over D.C.?
Correct.
Do you, since then, were able to contact any of the radar specialists that from Andrews? They were there at the time, by chance?
Well, my next-door neighbor, when I was an F-105 pilot at Seymour Johnson Air Force Base, was in the tower at Washington National at that time, and he confirmed that, yes, one was when the F-94s came up from Dover, because they were TDY from Andrews, he said that the UFOs kind of interacted with them. One of them followed one of them around the air, you know, could outmaneuver the guy. The guy couldn't get pointed at him. And one of them was seen leaving the radar screen at 7,000 miles an hour minimum. So, I've had talk to people. And the guy from Current Intelligence in the Pentagon, what was his name, Dewey Fournay, was also sent over to be in the tower at Washington National at that time. And he's talked about it at various conferences I've been to. And And you can find a lot on that on the internet, probably.
Thank you for taking my call, Mr. Smith. I forwarded you my number, Mr. Ware. Thank you very much.
Okay. All right, thanks for the call. 1-800-289-1092 is the number to call. 1-800-289-1092. And that's toll-free throughout all of the USA and Canada. One of the things that, you know, we're hearing it from you, and we're also, I've heard it from others, who, you know, they're talking about the UFOs as not being entirely just a vehicle, but that it's got intelligence about it. If I understood sort of the gist of some of what you've said, you sort of indicate that you think these vehicles may actually have some intelligence about them.
Well, I think most of the things we see have got aliens of various sorts in them. Let me tell you one little quick story that you reminded me of when you talked about the UN meeting.
Yeah.
In 1990, Dr. Norma Milanovich, assistant professor there at the University of Albuquerque, New Mexico, wrote a book called We the Arcturians, and she was invited to speak at the UN Metaphysical Society on the information in her book. You know, even though it was an unofficial meeting, that is, as far as the government, the UN is concerned, a lot of people who are interested in the alien presence come to these meetings at the Metaphysical Society there in the Union Building. It's now called the Society for Transformation and Enlightenment or something like that. Interesting subject. But somebody saw her there and invited her to sign a contract with the U.S. Department of Energy to teach the Wackenhut security guards that protect the bases where humans and aliens are working together her cosmology. In other words, to broaden their perception of the universe, because she's an excellent teacher and she knows a lot about it because she's dealing with Arcturians and other aliens for some time. So she did that so well. Actually, I was at a MUFON meeting, at an event following a MUFON meeting called a face-to-face invitational, something I did at major UFO conferences or following UFO conferences for 11 years in a row. I figured any time we have all those, you know, long-term researchers together, we ought to sit them around a table and have them each address the leading questions of the year. So I arranged that and made that happen. And she was at the table with me, and someone mentioned Wackenhut, and she slipped me a little note. She was sitting right beside me. She says, that's who I work for. And that's how I got into discussion with that. But she has since told me that she was hired by several major U.S. corporations like General Electric, Westinghouse, Martin Marietta, et cetera, to teach their management folks the broad cosmology which she has. It includes all these aliens. And I think that's quite interesting. I'm absolutely convinced that many major corporations in the United States have compartmentalized above top secret programs working on advanced technologies.
I think that's, I don't doubt that at all. Not at all. All right, let's go back to the telephone line. Caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name? Uh-huh. Okay. One really bright light bulb in the crowd, I guess. When you call in and you get put on hold, you can hear the show in the background. If you hang up, I will block you. There are other people trying to get in, and you're taking up their space by having that signal beeping like that on hold, all right? Caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name, and from where are you calling?
Yes, hello, it's Kevin from Iroquois Falls, Ontario.
Yes, Kevin.
Yes, and you guys are both, this has been a great show tonight. I've loved every minute of it.
Good.
And Colonel, you spoke about some U.S. Alien craft landings that have happened. Do you think you could shed some light on the Bentwaters case if all the information has not already been released about it?
Yeah, I'm convinced the Bentwaters case happened. Why it happened, I'm really not sure.
Okay, so you don't
I don't believe any of us have gotten the full story on that. I haven't seen that in some of the major released documents. I'm not sure whether you are familiar with the Project Serpo website.
Yep,
but if you aren't, you should be. Because the 27th release of the Project Serpo website included Bill Casey's briefing to President Reagan in 1981. It's an all-day briefing at Camp David on the alien presence. And it included his introduction, even though that was his third briefing on the alien presence. The first one was after he was elected, before he took office. Then he had a one-hour briefing in January of 81 in the White House. And then in March of 81, he got this all-day briefing at Camp David by the head of our CIA, Bill Casey.
All right, thank you very much.
And he talked about the exchange program that the U.S. Air Force had in 1965, where we sent 12 U.S. Air Force officers to their planet Serpo, 38.42 light years away, intending to stay 10 years. One died just before he got there. Another was killed by a 15-foot-long snake-like creature. And two of them decided to stay, and eight of them came home in 1978, restricted to military bases being watched so they couldn't tell the world what's going on Serpo. And when the last one died in 2002, then they were, by their rules, they were allowed to leak that information to us. But Serpo is a widely known website, and I highly recommend it. The latest release on Serpo, by the way, was... The latest release was, I think, concerning the Pope. When the Pope was here in this country recently, someone they referred to as our special guest, who apparently is an alien, came to Washington and sat down with him, and he was really interested in what the religion was of these alien folks on Serpo. They had a long discussion, and it said in there that the Pope accepted the fact that their God's the same as our God, and that's why that member of the Vatican made the statement they did shortly after the Pope got home.
All right, let's go back to the telephone. Caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
Hi, Kevin. This is Ryan in Washington.
Yeah, Ryan.
Great show tonight.
Thank
really
you.
Great show. My question for the guest was, during his service in the Air Force, did he ever have any experience with Wright-Patterson Air Force Base, apparently?
I did get my master's in nuclear engineering at the Air Force Institute of Technology, Wright-Patterson, so I was there for 21 months, yes.
Do you know Robert Collins?
I don't know him. Of course, he's involved with a number of the releases recently, and I've read a lot of his emails recently. I'm on Victor Martinez's distribution list.
Well, that was basically what my question was.
Yeah.
All right. Thanks for the call.
All right, well, let me take a minute to tell you what I just wrote. While I was waiting for Kevin to call me, one of my jobs on the board of the International UFO Congress is to write a synopsis of all the 42 lectures or 40 lectures we had at our last International UFO Congress. And I just finished writing one from Richard Dolan. And this is how it ends up. He spoke about a secret space program. He noted that computer hacker Gary McKinnon spoke about our Space Command's non-terrestrial office. Dolan said, quote, ETs have been here a very long time. Hybridization is happening. End quote. Rapidly increasing new technologies put humanity on a tightrope. We have a chance to get to the other side, but with a fundamentally different society. Concerning exopolitical problems, he asked, what if some ETs hold positions of great power in our society? Concerning political problems, how do you undo a lie this big? And he closed by asking, are we ready for ET? It was a very good lecture.
Well, he poses a question, what if ETs hold, some ETs hold positions of high power in our society? Let me ask you this question. Do they?
I suspect they do. I have no direct evidence. However, one of the first books on that subject I read was Dr. Strange's book about E.T. in the Pentagon or something like that.
Mm-hmm. A stranger in the Pentagon or something.
Stranger in, yeah, something like, yeah, who is an E.T. who Dr. Strange had met a couple of times, I think, and communicated with telepathically. Are we ready for E.T.? Many of us are, particularly the people listening to the show, I would suspect, but the majority of us are not, in my opinion. I don't think we're ready. A majority of the people on the planet, emotionally, mentally, or spiritually. And the spiritual aspects are probably more important than the others.
It's a mystery to me. I mean, all over this world, the world is at war. I mean, there are little brush fire wars all over the planet. And, you know, the thing that people are fighting about more than anything else is their version of God.
Mm-hmm.
And that just blows my mind. I mean, you gotta wonder, if your God is really all that powerful, does he need you to go kill somebody for him?
Right. Yeah.
I mean, he can't do it. I don't know. It just blows my mind. It would seem to me that an all-powerful God could just, you know, think about your heart and just think, stop. And it would.
Yeah. You know, my personal opinion is anybody who wants to know more about God ought to be a student of the Urantia book. U-R-A-N-T-I-A is some higher intelligence name for this planet. And there is a truth-seeker group called The Forum at Dr. Sadler's home every Sunday afternoon in Chicago in the first half of this century. And they had someone who had telepathic abilities, and over a 50-year project, they were asked to write down every question they had ever had about anything and put them on little pieces of paper. And then they submitted those questions, and they received a paper in response. They were told by their unseen teachers, make copies for everybody in the Truth Seeker group, which included guys with PhDs in a wide variety of subjects, smart enough to ask the right questions. And they were told to read the paper and write questions on anything they didn't understand. They resubmitted the paper and the questions, and they got a second draft. Well, the book, this all happened starting in 1934. The book, which was published in 1955, is the third draft of 196 papers. And it answers all of their questions, and essentially it answers most all of my questions. But the first 100 pages are a detailed description of the Trinity, or divinity, which, you know, Christians refer to as the Father, Son, and the Holy Ghost. in that book, the one of the primary names are the Universal Father, the Eternal Son, and the Infinite Spirit. And then it goes on to describe the personalities created in paradise to manage the various structures of the grand universe and give you a little insight into the spiritual hierarchy. And then it's the history of everything, including the origins of mankind, the origins of the solar system, origins of life, all about different cultures and how they developed. And it ended up with, a detailed description of the life of Jesus with no missing years. But after reading that book, and after studying all the other books that had a lot of telepathically acquired information, such as the Bible, the Quran, the Book of Mormon, the Keys of Enoch, the four books of the Law of One called the Raw Material, OWASPI, a new Bible published in 1982, after studying all that stuff, I think what happened, what's causing the wars right now, the most serious ones anyway, are that Gabriel, who is the first creation and right-hand man of Michael, a creator son, who essentially created all life in our local solar system, or our local universe, he was the one that prepared the way for Michael to incarnate here as Jesus a couple thousand years ago. And that was supposed to overcome the bad effects it's had on human beings from the Lucifer rebellion and the fact that Adam and Eve's tour of duty was cut short here. That allowed our technological evolution to get too far ahead of our spiritual evolution. That's bad when that happened. That's why there's been a moratorium on advanced technologies that can be put into the public domain since 1938, when Hitler broke the rule. Most people may not be aware that aliens saw us starting to carry people around in airplanes as early as 1929, and they knew that if we burn fossil fuels doing that, we're going to add so much CO2 to the atmosphere, it's going to lead to global warming, and that's bad. So they decided that they were going to help us out by giving us an opportunity to use anti-gravity technologies. Aldebarans, who were looking much like humans, can work with us face-to-face without freaking us out too much, were assigned as technical advisors to the best scientists on the planet who were German. And in 1938, when Hitler put an anti-tank gun turret on the bottom of a 100-foot diameter flying saucer, he broke the rule because he was getting belligerent with his neighbors at the same time. So then the Pleiadians, who've been our teachers for a long time, came and picked up those vehicles, their scientists that built them and their families, and took them all to an alien base in the jungles of South America and gave them a choice. Said, you can raise your kids on the Pleiadians or you can raise them here, but if you stay here, you have to stay separated from the rest of the warring nations. And I'm told that some did choose to go to the Pleiades, and some of their kids have now chosen to come back here and are working for companies like BMW on their black budget programs. Those that stayed here worked in the Antarctic, continued to build these flying saucers. Hitler still had flying saucers, but he knew he couldn't militarize them. I'm told that by my CIA friends and by Wendell Stevens, who studied this quite a bit, that we brought 30 flying saucers back to this country from Germany in 1945 and took them to White Sands Missile Range and to Area 51. In fact, the one that crashed across the border south of Laredo was one of those vehicles that was unmanned, had a monkey on board but not a man, lost control of it in the crash, and we sent a tank retriever across the border and latched onto it and drug it back across the border. My friends tell me that you can still see the scar marks in the desert from that little thing that happened back in the early 50s.
All right, we have to take a break. This is fascinating, and I want us to continue with this.
Yeah.
I'm really, really into that information about the Antarctic and the captured saucers and so forth. So we're going to get to that. But we first have to take this break, and we will return right after this.
Kevin Smith at 1-800-289-1092.
Hey, if you haven't joined yet, of course, listening to the show live is absolutely free and shall always be. But in the members area, there are a lot of goodies, and one of those goodies is the full archive. So if you haven't joined yet, be sure you do that, all right? Just go over to kevinsmithshow.com, and you'll see it on the menu. Become a member, all right? We're talking with Colonel Donald Ware, and retired from the U.S. Air Force. And we're talking about probably, for some folks, it's not strange stuff. And for other folks, it may be the strangest stuff you've ever heard. But it is the kind of stuff that's making its way into the news on a virtually a daily basis now. Let me ask about this thing with the Antarctic base. Now, that's been rumored for a long time. I've read lots of stuff ever since there's been an internet. Do you remember back before there was really the internet, and you know there was Prodigy, and I think CompuServe, and these were like gigantic bulletin boards, and they became internet. You remember those days, Donald?
I remember that a bit, although I was later than many of my friends in getting a computer.
Well, was reading about this Antarctic thing. Let me say to the caller that's on hold, just hang on a minute. I want to hear about Antarctica, and then we'll take the call.
Yeah, I heard about it, but Graham Bethune was a friend of mine, and he was the one that flew Admiral Byrd down to Antarctica right after the war was over. He knew the United States government knew something strange was going on down there, and they sent him down there to find out. Well, Admiral Byrd was sent home early. He was supposed to stay 2 weeks, and
he was supposed to stay 6 months, wasn't he?
Huh?
He was supposed to stay 6 months, I think.
Well, Graham told me that on this trip to Antarctica in 1945, he was supposed to be down there 2 weeks, I think, but.
Yeah, I was thinking about Operation High Jump, which took place in the 50s.
I think the result of that meeting was that U.S. scientists joined the German scientists that were working with the ET advisors down there. But I think it's that technology that allowed us, that is humans, to put our first manned base on Mars in 1963. I think at least parts of that film released in Great Britain called Alternative 3 is real. And I'm convinced we had bases on the moon before that.
All right, we're going to come back to that. Okay. Let's take this call. Caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where you're calling. Okay, that one's blocked. All right, if you do that, you didn't want to talk to us next week either. All right, so this first manned base on Mars in 63, you said?
That's what I've been told, yep. That's what Alternative 3 said, and I think that was an authorized release, yes.
And then
but,
you think...
You know, that was actually 2 years before 12 Air Force officers were sent with the aliens to their planet Serpo, a lot farther away.
Well, do we still have this base on Mars?
I presume we have many bases on Mars, but I know very little about it. One thing I got recently, people have been talking about this Bilderberg meeting taking place in Washington.
Mm-hmm.
They just released, the Bilderberg group just released the list of participants. You know, when they kept it secret, the investigators would go to such ends to try to find out who they were, and they would produce a lot of incorrect information, so the Bilderberg release the list every year. And there were 141 people, you know, making big decisions for the world at that meeting. 44 of them were U.S. participants, 6 of them international participants, and the 89 were from other countries. There are only 2 there as reporters, and they both work for The Economist, although executives from both the Wall Street Journal and the Washington Post were participating. But it's interesting just to read through that list of 141 people and what the positions were that caused them to be at that meeting. It's online now, available if anybody wants to read it.
Well, does this group have anything to say about or to do with bases on Mars or bases on the moon? Are they connected with that in some way?
Probably not directly, but they're managing a world economy that does have black budgets, or as Dan Sherman said, gray budgets, because a lot of those black budgets have gray projects buried in them.
Mm-hmm.
And Dan told us that our Senate Oversight Committee has no information on any of the human alien projects, the gray projects.
Now, you said the bases on the moon were there before the one on Mars.
Yeah, it's easier to get to the moon than it is Mars.
When did we first establish a base on the moon?
I don't have that date, but if you can realize that we had anti-gravity vehicles in 1945 or earlier, you know, some of those scientists that were taken down there, I expect had the capability of building stuff that they'd been building in Germany.
Now, you said that following World War II, that the United States gathered up and brought back to the United States 30 of these flying saucers, these right. UFOs. And I presume that these are craft that were built by the Germans, right?
That's correct, yeah.
All right, were they functional?
Apparently they were. I was told by a CIA friend that when human beings, that is when British and German, or British and American bombers were firebombing the German cities. We were killing off large numbers of some of the best genes on the planet, the most advanced genetically human beings, like the 100,000 we smothered in one night in Dresden, that our alien friends allowed the Germans to use their flying saucers to stop those raids. And the way they did it, they filled tanks with benzene and went above and ahead of our bomber fleets and sprayed that benzene into the atmosphere so that when the bomber fleets flew into the fuel-air mixture, it would be an explosive mixture. And I'm told by my CIA friends that they blew a lot of our bombers out of the sky that way, and that's what stopped firebombing of the German cities.
And they use these saucer craft to do that.
Anti-gravity vehicles, yeah. Mm-hmm. That's what they use. It could outmaneuver our bomber fleets and get higher and, you know, whatever, carry heavy loads. But it's those kinds of vehicles, I think, that were used to... I think after the war, all the vehicles that Germany had left were either brought here or taken to the Antarctica, wherever they could test fly them without being seen.
All right,
shouldn't have taken us too long to get to the moon.
Yeah, so 30 of them are brought here to the United States.
Mm-hmm.
Now, what happened to them?
I don't have all those answers. Some crashed. Wendell talks about 12 different crashes in the Southwest in the 1950s that he personally was involved in investigating most of those, I think.
So a lot of the UFO reports that were coming in from that time could be these craft.
Yes. One in particular, and this is a different story, but there was a German scientist who came to the United States with what appeared to be a hybrid daughter. And they linked up with a businessman in Illinois and purchased an abandoned coal mine and started building anti-gravity vehicles there in this country a long time ago. This may have been, probably was the 30s. I don't recall the exact date. But it may have been a little later. But they were building cylindrical-shaped vehicles. And it was one of the vehicles built here in this country with the assistance of this German scientist that landed on a Michigan farm. And the guy got out and went and asked for water, and the farmer gave him water, and he was invited back onto the vehicle. And he noticed that they were cooking pancakes. And they gave him one, and it was tested. It turned out to be a buckwheat pancake, you know, just like we would buy here. But it was on board this anti-gravity vehicle, landed on his farm back in the 50s. So there was a UFO that the UFO community, when I was studying them, you know, it was one of the major cases in the public domain, and it was man-made.
All right, we have to take a break, and when we come back from this break, we'll take your calls. We will be on final approach for landing, so you'll if you've been sitting there thinking, I want to call, I want to ask a question, this is your moment.
Yeah. Please say was overdue. I wanna hear it from you. It's a lie, it's a lie, I know it's true. It's a lie, it's a lie, I know it's true. It's a lie, it's just a lie. Till I hear from you. It's a lie. That I said I do. The broken promises I said I'd keep and buried me too deep.
Most of the great music you hear right here on Steel Eye Media Network is supplied by the independent artists from GarageBand.com. If you hear a song you like, go over to GarageBand.com, look it up, download it. You can even buy the group's CDs, in many cases, right there at GarageBand.com.
Call Kevin Smith at 1-800-289-1092.
And welcome back. My guest is Colonel Donald Ware, and we are on Final Approach. That means we only have about 10 minutes left in this show. If you've been trying to call in, the lines are clear right now. 1-800-289-1092 is the number to call, and you need to hurry if you're going to do that.
While we're waiting for a call, may I mention a couple of websites?
Sure.
I've studied many different subjects, and when I finished the subject, I'd write a paper on it as I'd move toward another subject. And so on my website at freewebs.com/Don Ware, you can read it's about a 20-page paper called UFOs and Telepathic Communications. There's one on 11 government cover-ups and probable reasons. One called Transformation, Spiritual, Physical, and Political, My Commentary on Abductions, just a whole bunch of things your audience might be interested in. And then on one of the things I do as a director of the International UFO Congress is I convert each of those 90-minute lectures into one long paragraph. And I've been doing that for 15 or more years now. And almost all of those are archive there on the UFOCongress.com website. So that's a vast store of information that is available for folks. If your audience is interested in the the more spiritual aspects of this thing we call world transformation. I think lucistrust.org is probably one of the best sites around, or worldgoodwill.org. Lucis is L-U-C-I-S, trust.org. And if you're interested in world affairs, the foreign affairs website is probably my favorite. Okay, I said my spiel now.
Well, you've given us a great, great many things to think about here tonight. You know, it's not just, I mean, for a lot of people, this whole topic comes down to they're just now beginning to wake up to the fact that those things in the sky that people have been seeing, people are not nuts, they're not crazy, those things are real. So they're just waking up to that fact. For a great many other people, they're way beyond that, and they've gotten to a point where they're realizing that, you know, it's not just an amazing light show, but there are some intelligent beings in charge of that amazing light show. And they're beginning to think about, what does it mean for us when we begin to interface with these beings?
Kevin, one way to look at it is that many of us have already joined a galactic society, and many of us are not ready. But there are a number who are maybe ready and don't know it, and I think those are our audience more than those that the majority who are probably not ready for aliens.
All right, let's spend we've got about 6 minutes here, so let's spend this time dealing with this question. You said you think it will not be very far into the future, and there's going to be, and this is my characterization of it, but an unambiguous face-to-face hello from extraterrestrials.
Yes.
All right. Now, what do you how far into the future do you think that is? That's question number one.
One of the tasks, I've been given a number of tasks by unseen beings, some that I know are in physical ET-type bodies, non-human bodies, because I know people who've, you know, seen them, given them a tour of their house, etc. I know 90 people who've been on board alien vehicles many times. They are part of this galactic society. I mean, we are getting genes from these little Zeta Reticulan guys that are giving us a bigger hard drive, a faster chip, and a new USB port for telepathy. So I'm convinced that we've got this joint program going on that where we're producing better bodies to house our souls in future incarnations. At a lecture in Washington, D.C. in 1995 called When Cosmic Cultures Meet, put on with Lawrence Rockefeller's money, I was invited to moderate a panel on hope. And it was a very interesting lecture, but my friend Scott Jones, he invited Bill Clinton and Hillary Clinton and Carl Sagan and all those people, UN people, to come and speak there, because he thought they ought to be interested in that subject, When Cosmic Cultures Meet. And they all turned him down and sent their lawyer. He also published the invitation letters and the responses to those letters from Bill and Hillary, by the way. The lawyer is named George C. Robinson, and his title was Homo Alterius Spatialis, the Interdependence Between Extraterrestrials and Earthkind. However, the subtitle was changed when they published it in the Proceedings, which you can get from headlinebooks.com, to Homo Alterius Spatialis, A Transgenic Odyssey. He said, you can't take any national law into space. You have to figure out what the cosmic or natural laws are, what laws pertain to us out there, to aliens down here, and to human-alien hybrids here, there, and everywhere. This is a guy with good credentials. I mean, he'd been legal counsel to the National Research Council, legal counsel to the Smithsonian Institute. So I got him invited to our International UFO Congress and told him that, yeah, we'd like to hear the same kind of things he said in Washington. his title was Space Law and Astral Law.
Now, let me ask a question for clarification. This is a lawyer that was sent, the guy sends for this conference or this meeting, he sends invitations to Bill and Hillary. They send this lawyer.
Well, Scott Jones, the president of the Human Potential Foundation, co-founded with Senator Claiborne Pell, sent invitations to Bill, our president, and Hillary, his wife, to speak at that conference. And they turned him down. Their letters of, you know, are published in the proceedings. And the guy that did come was the lawyer, the first guy to get a Ph.D. in civil law relating to space. So I invited him to come to our conference to speak. He did in August 98, International UFO Congress. And he said, we humans have already made a new subspecies called Homo sapiens alterius, and a new species, Homo alterius spatialis, and we did it to make us more survivable on off-planet conditions. He mentioned the moon, Mars, and said probably Europa. Interesting
wow.
stuff.
It is
There's
indeed.
More information into the public domain than any of us could possibly assimilate in the rest of our lifetimes. Seek it, and you will find it.
All right. Well, Donald Ware, I want to thank you for being with me this evening. As always, it has been fascinating.
Okay, let me mention one more paper.
All right.
If you'll Google Majestic 12 Project First Annual Report, what I did, I got a 17-page photocopy of a draft written in 1952 for President Truman just before he left the office. This was a full report by the U.S. government to our outgoing president on the alien presence. It's been in the public domain since 1995 when it was released through Tim Cooper. The Disclosure Project, not Disclosure Project, but Ryan Wood has it in his files.
All right, I hate to do it, but the show is over and the music is playing and we're out of here. That's a wrap. Folks, if you miss a single second of this show, you miss a universe of information. And you want to be sure and be here for the next show as well. My friends call me Steel Eye. My enemies do too. You call me whatever you want, all right? Just keep coming back again and again and again. Until next time, so long, everybody.